You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, welcome to the Gastroenteritis Blues. My name is Steve Lippman. I'm joined, as always, by Emily Cannell and Dan Volpone. I ask you, Dan, first. Dan, if you had to give up one of these things for the rest of your life, what would you give up? A, dessert. B, alcohol. What do you choose?
Dessert. I don't even eat that many desserts.
Really? Not a dessert guy?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the healthier choice would be alcohol. I feel like it makes it sound bad to say I'm not giving up alcohol.
It depends on what you indulge in more and what you enjoy more.
I'm just not really a dessert guy. Like, it wouldn't be that much to give it up. Like, if you said like breakfast or alcohol, I'd give up alcohol. You know what I mean? Because I love breakfast. It's more of a dessert thing than an alcohol thing.
Yeah, you're just not a huge dessert guy.
Yeah.
Now, are you counting candy in that? Like, would that change the calculus at all?
No, I just like, I like some candies, but I don't eat a ton of candy. And like, occasionally there will be a dessert I like, but like, I don't need it, you know? Like, it's like, it's what do you call that? It's like expendable, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Emily, same question to you. You have to give up one of these items, dessert or candy? Nope. Dessert or alcohol. What do you give up?
I would give up alcohol.
Oh, interesting. Tell me why.
I love dessert. I like could never give up ice cream in my entire life. It's like one of my favorite foods. Mm-hmm. So I just couldn't do it. Like I crave dessert like every night. I don't have it every night because we don't always have stuff. But like if I could eat ice cream every night, I would. I just love dessert, and I'm getting old and I can't drink that much anymore anyways. So
I would love to ask you this question. Do you believe if you took this swap, would you get into other narcotics or mind-altering substances? Would you start crushing up Adderall? Would you get into marijuana? Would you become a cocaine person? What would you get?
If we don't say narcotics, we say opioids.
No, we don't. I'm watching Dope Sick. Don't do that.
Dope Sick is so good.
Narcotics is a legal term.
Yeah.
But aren't opioids only like opiates? Like cocaine is not an opiate. It's like a benzo or something.
Yeah, it's a different kind of drug.
Yeah, well, no, the answer is no. I don't think I would get that. I don't know. I've never done cocaine. I don't know what it does.
Not interesting. No, thank you.
No, I've never been a weed person. I'm not. I like I said, if I haven't done it by now, I'm not going to do it.
Sure.
Like, I'm old, so.
Well, good to know. The Sixers have won 6 games in a row, and it's been a lot of fun. This week they beat Houston, Orlando, and the San Antonio Spurs. Not exactly a murderer's row, but you play who's on the schedule and don't ask Doc Rivers about whether or not they're winning easy games in an easy way. They won 6 straight. The first thing I think to talk about, Dan left the room. He's hopping.
He looked like he was like dancing. Is he happy about something?
I don't know. the Sixers have won 6 straight. He's back. They're looking really good. It's fun to see them win a bunch of games. They won 6 straight and I believe are now 6 games over 500. The number one thing to talk about here is that Joel is playing really, really, really well. Is he playing as well as he played last year when he was second in the MVP voting? NBA.com put out their like MVP ladder and Joel was 4th in this right now. And he is now like in sort of the thick of the MVP conversation. The Sixers are now right around 5th, I think a game and a half out of 4th in the Eastern Conference standings right now. It's so fun to watch him play well again. And you know, since he came back from COVID, he's just looked really incredible. He's had, I think, six straight games of 31 points or more. His passing has been incredible. That's like the leap this year for him so far, has been his improved passing. And obviously with Ben no longer a Sixer in any meaningful way, he's had to, you know, find his teammates better, and he's really done that. So, you know, this week they had those three wins. We can talk a little bit more specifically about them, but just overall, Joel looking incredible and playing his way back into the MVP conversation. Dan, any thoughts about Joel this week and overall him playing his way back into MVP talks?
Yeah, I mean, he's been great. I think, you know, he's basically back into last year's form right now. Although, you know, I wouldn't say he's having as good of a year because he wasn't as good to start the year, but he's definitely had a pretty sustained stretch now where he has been as good, which I don't think is too surprising. Like, I didn't think that like last year was some anomaly and it was the best he had to give and he couldn't do it again. He's shooting the ball really well. His shot looks like it's back. They're running the offense through him constantly, which is, he's been really good at. He's honestly picked up on a lot of the things that Ben used to do for him. He's gotten a lot better in transition. He's gotten a lot better passing the ball. And the team has been playing better. They haven't been playing the toughest teams, but I mean, they really didn't play the toughest teams last year. I feel like they barely played any tough games all of last year because every team had, you know, guys out, or it was a weird year. So I don't think that it's fair to say, you know, well, they haven't played anyone, when to take away from how well he's played and kind of the new things he seems to have added to his game. And then the other big thing for Joel this past week was in the Spurs game, he just dunked everything. Like,
it was so cool.
He has so many dunks. I feel like we're not used to seeing him go up for so many contested dunks. Usually if he's contested, he won't go up for a dunk. And sometimes he does, but you don't usually see him do it over and over and over in a game. So that was new. I liked it a lot because I think, you know, it's a really high percentage play. You're either going to get fouled or you're going to, you know, make it, or hopefully you don't get hurt on the play. But I think that he was like really aggressive going to the rim, which I loved, and has become, you know, as a creator and as a transition player, which the Sixers have lacked, really stepped up in the last few weeks in a way that I think it's like, we've kind of seen him building towards this. We've seen him try to add, you know, passing out of the double, and he just looks so comfortable now when they're sending the double every time, and they've been for like 2 or 3 years, and his turnovers are down, his assists are up. He shoots over the double like it's nothing. Like, he might as well not be doubled at times. Like, he looks so comfortable there in a way that, you know, I don't think he quite did. Like, even last year, I think that, you know, he looks more comfortable making quick decisions before the double came, or, you know, passing out quickly, but not passing, not, you know, looking off the defense and then finding, you know, a truly open player, or like a guy in position to score. His passing like is not just creating more for guys, but he's not throwing the ball away as much. He's not like trying to dribble through the double and get it taken from him as much. Just like all around has just looked a lot better at the things that used to be clear weaknesses for him. He's been great.
Yeah. And people have talked about his moments as a leader. Obviously this whole season has been, the Ben thing has been looming over it. And I think Joel has handled that so well. Like he's sort of put his head down and worked through it and has said the right things. You know, Ben gets thrown out of practice and Joel speaks up and he will talk shit in the moments where I feel like he can't hold it in anymore. And I think he has every right to. And he's had these moments after games like he had with Maxi, and after this one, he found Matisse a bunch of times under the rim, and he also was telling Matisse to shoot more threes and encouraging him in that way, which I love. He's been really excellent. It's been so fun to watch him. Emily, what have you thought this week of Joel and like, you know, him playing his way back into, you know, last year, where it's like you don't know that you're ever going to get another peak like that from Joel, because sometimes guys have years like that they never reach again. So what do you think of it?
Yeah, I think it's really impressive. And I think I think it took him a little bit to play back into shape after he had COVID, but I think he's fully back. And if he can keep this up, I definitely think he has another MVP campaign on his hands. I was looking at the odds last night, which right now he's plus 4,000, which I think is like crazy. DeMar DeRozan is ahead of him, which is weird. I mean, I know he's playing well in Chicago, but he's not better than Joel.
Right.
And then like the usual, like I think Steph is the favorite, which isn't surprising. And then the rest is like Giannis, Jokic, same old, same old. I don't think that either of them at this point are putting together like a massive campaign. So I think that there's like good value there if anyone wants to bet it. At the beginning of the season, he was plus 700. So now he's like kind of played himself out, but I think he's going to play himself back into the odds. So he's just been really impressive, especially in December. His numbers are crazy. The Sixers are winning. They're fun to watch. I've been enjoying the games a lot.
Yeah. The first game of the week against Houston on Monday was most notable for the Tobias against the fans back and forth. The Sixers had a very classic first half against a Houston team that is trying to lose every game they possibly can. And they didn't even have the guys on the team who are somewhat good, like Kevin Porter Jr. and Christian Wood, who were suspended for the game. And the Sixers were just fucking around, like sort of losing the game. And like the game was never really in doubt, but the fans are watching them fumble away the game. Joel was the only Sixer playing well and trying. And Tobias was missing everything by like 5 feet and he was getting booed. And Tobias is in the middle of a bad season and he's getting paid a lot of money and the fans are in the crowd and fans paid money to see the game and the fans are upset and they're booing him. Now, it's of course not fun to be booed as an athlete. So Tobias heard some loud boos after he missed a shot to go 3 for 10. And then he gestured to the fans to boo him more. He sort of put his hands out so as to egg them on. Now, this is during the middle of a play. Like, Sixers got an offensive rebound, but Tobias is busy putting his hands, egging them on to boo him more. So then Tobias, in the second half, when the game was in hand, Tobias backed somebody down and scored a sort of turnaround jumper. And
missing a wide open pass to Andre Drummond on the play.
Yes. Tobias scored, and then a couple fans clapped, and Tobias said, "Don't fucking clap. Don't fucking clap. This is a bad day." Tobias was having a bad day at the office, and it was just rough. It was not a good day. He did not speak to reporters after the game. I don't know that they requested him. Tobias is generally very good about speaking to the media, so I do not know that he declined to speak to them or anything. But he did not comment after the game. Then they played against Orlando. Tobias had a much better game. They asked him about that. And Tobias had some very good quotes. I was worried that it was going to become like a fucking two-week shit fest between Tobias and the fans. And it wasn't, because I think he was able to like decompress a little bit and figure it out. He said, "I don't want anybody to get it twisted. I love our fan base. With praise, you also have to be willing to take criticism as well. I don't think anybody in that arena is harder on me than I am on myself. I want to play the greatest basketball I can play. I play my ass off daily to get to that point. Nobody died. I just got booed." Sure, I think those are good quotes. I think that fans, you know, we've talked about this, so we don't have to spend a lot of time here. Fans are completely entitled to boo players. Don't say shitty things. Don't write mean tweets. Just, you're allowed to boo if you're in the stadium. Tobias is certainly entitled to not enjoy being booed,
and entitled to say don't fucking clap.
listen, Tobias, if you tell him don't clap and don't boo, you're not giving him many options, so you got to tell him what to do. I think that he was venting frustration, and I totally get it. You know, he was having a fucking shitty day, and we've all had bad days, and he's in the middle of a rough year. So I get it. And he had a much better week this week, and, you know, good on him for having better quotes. And I was happy to see that he, had some good quotes about it. people know how we feel about this. Emily, do you have anything to add on this?
No, I think it was fine. It doesn't like bother me. It doesn't. I honestly like him like getting fired up and being like, I don't want any of this from any of you. Like you know, you boo me at my worst. Don't clap for me at my best. Also just like, I suck. Don't clap it for me. Like, I don't know which way it was coming from. Either way, I love it. And he played better at the next few games. Like the other games this week, he was pretty good. Tobias bothers me less than he bothers you guys. Like, I'm not gonna shit on Tobias for passing, for giving up like a wide open pass to Drummond on a basket that he made. Like, if he made the basket, I don't really give a shit. But that's just the way I look at it. This, I'm like kind of like Doc Rivers in that way, you know. If we win the game, I don't really give a shit. Yeah, I'm fine with it. I like a fire. I like a fire game. I like something. I like it. I don't care.
Yeah. I will say the issue, somebody else pointed this out after the Monday game, like when Tobias's shots aren't going in, he doesn't end up doing, like when Simmons, you remember him, when Simmons would have a bad, when Simmons would have a bad game from the field, he would get assists and he would play really good defense all the time and get loose balls and stuff like that. That would in general help the way the team was playing otherwise. And Tobias just in general doesn't do those things that help when his shot isn't going in. So I think that makes him an easier target because it's pretty binary. Is his shot going in or is it not? Which makes it just much easier to pick on him, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to you know, it's harder to just make the shots that he takes, which are tougher shots, you know?
I feel like the mindset is like slightly different too, because Tobias on paper like should be dependent on scoring for so much, but not like in compared to Ben where like he's also dependent on for defense and like assists and stuff. So if you're in the mindset of like I should score and you're not scoring, then I think you don't go to like, oh well, what are the other things that I do well? You're like, fuck, I should.
What you're saying is he sucks.
And like, no, but like Ben Simmons is like known for his defense. Tobias Harris is not known for his defense. Not all basketball players are known for their defense. So like, if you're have these two facets of your game that you're known for, and there are plenty of players like Steph Curry that are known for their offense. If Steph Curry's like shot isn't, well, he's like the best player in the NBA, so that's different, but whatever. Like Ben can be like, okay, I'll fall back on my defense. I can make like a contribution that way. But if you're known for being a scorer, or like that's what your bread and butter supposedly is, you're going to want to score the basketball. And then the more you miss, the more frustrated you get.
Yeah. Dan, you're on the record with Tobias here. Anything else on the back and forth Monday and then Tobias's quotes on whatever it was, Wednesday?
I mean, I just want to say I agree with some things that Emily said. I disagree with some others. I agree. I don't really care that much. I think it's pathetic, I'll say that. Like, I'm judging him for it, but I'm not like offended by it. Like, it's whatever. The thing with like Tobias, Emily's point about Tobias like showing some fire, like I would love if just once he would show some fire towards the other team and like dive for a loose ball and like, you know, get excited at a big moment in the game, not just because the fans are upset at him. Like the only time we've even really seen him show much fire is directed towards the fans in all of the season. I agree, his quotes after the Orlando game were like, I guess they were fine, you know what I mean? Like they were, I think, you know, they were well said, and they were, he's allowed to, I view it as a mistake personally. I think it was dumb what he did. And he's allowed to make mistakes. It's not the end of the world. I was happy to see him have what I think was a really good game in San Antonio, which maybe we'll get to later. You know, I didn't have any issue. It's not like I was rooting against him. You know what I mean? Like I was rooting for him. He played well. It was, you know, there was no, I was moved on. You know what I mean? It wasn't the end of the world or anything. I just thought it was like a dumb thing to do. I don't really admire it because I think that we don't see enough. I don't think we see enough like passion from him at certain parts of the game anyway. Like when his shot has been off and he's just like not like, I don't really care if he's not known for his defense. Like go take a charge if you're playing like step up, do something else to help your team. It can't be, and especially it can't be like, there can't be so many games as there have been this year where it's like, okay, Tobias is clearly on the floor because he's making $35 million this year. And like Doc would have like taken someone else out of the game by now. Whereas like, yes, his shot's off, but like he's giving you nothing else. If you're giving us nothing else, your offense can't be off half of the games. And like, I don't know. I think it was dumb. I didn't like it. I didn't respect it. I respect his, you know, basically apology. And I, like I said, it didn't offend me. I just thought it was really dumb. And it bothers me more as like a player where it's like, why is this what you're thinking about? In the middle of a basketball game, in a fairly close game, you're going at it with the fans. You're not upset at yourself or your teammates for playing close against this awful team in a game you need to win, because you can't drop those kind of games when you got, you know, Joel missed so much time early and you're, you know, the sixth seed at that point. You have to win the games you should win. And I don't think it's acceptable for you to lose focus. And that's basically what Dan Burke said after the game, which is, you know, our focus can't be the referees. Our focus can't be the fans. Our focus has to be, you know, on our own play, and our accountability has to be towards ourselves. It can't be, well, the fans were doing this or the refs called this. And I totally agree. And I think it's basically, you know, in the moment, a lack of taking personal accountability for his terrible play. I think that his statements afterwards prove that that was just in the moment. I think he is taking accountability for his play in general. I don't mean to blow it up more than anything, but when I look at what happened, that's what it is to me. And I don't respect any part of it. I just like, and it's not a Tobias thing. I mean, Julius Randle did the same thing. I didn't respect that either. Right. Another guy who's not a Sixers guy who has played bad this year, who, you know, is yelling at the fans. I think it's dumb. He had to apologize too. And I think it shows is that your fire, your passion, your focus, your energy is all in the wrong place.
Did Randle walk that back officially?
Yeah, he made an Instagram post that was honestly a lot less. I found it to be a lot less thoughtful than what Tobias had to say after the Orlando game. I thought it kind of fell a bit flat, whereas I thought that Tobias had a pretty good shared some pretty good thoughts after that Orlando game.
What did he say? Actually, Drew, we have Drew on our podcast with us. Drew, can you, when you get a chance, just look up Julius Randle's post. For people who are listening, Julius Randle, in their game against Brooklyn, was it?
The Celtics.
He was playing really badly and was getting booed, and he made a big bucket, and then he did a thumbs down. Now, if you remember the Mets season, Javi Baez and Lindor started giving thumbs downs to the fans.
But and had been doing it for like weeks before anyone asked them why they were doing it. And then once they said it was the fans, had to apologize.
To say fuck the fans. And they asked Julius Randle, what did you mean by the thumbs down after the game? And Julius Randle said it was for the fans, and it meant shut the fuck up. It's like, why would you say that? So Drew, what did Julius Randle say in his Instagram post?
So it was the better part of like four paragraphs. Okay. A lot of it is repeating the same stuff. I see the support means the world to us.
Oh no.
I understand that my actions
represent
the league, the organization. My comment was an example of how sometimes you say things you regret to people you love, even if it came from a place of passion and deep love.
What?
Nobody wants to win more than me, and I will continue to show loyalty and dedication to my teammates, the entire Knicks organization, and the fans who have shown me and my family so much love. I'm going to keep focusing on the future. Thank you. Go Knicks.
Remarkable. Thank you, Drew. That's great stuff. that's really good. All right. I feel like we've covered the Tobias thing, unless you guys have anything else. Matisse went back into protocols for a few days, and then he came back out. He talked about being frustrated by the way the league has sort of ping-ponged with the protocol rules. Now it's, I think, 5 days. I can't really keep track. The CDC has also changed up the rules to try to get people back to work. And Maxey is now in protocols, and he shouldn't be in those for too much longer. B-Ball Paul is in protocols, and he's grabbing boobs on his Instagram. He's very busy. What else do we have? Oh, a guy named Charlie Brown Jr. is on the Sixers now. He made a layup. He seems like a lot of fun. He's got fun hair. Oh, and I forgot to mention Joel won Player of the Month as part of the Joel MVP campaign. We're going to take a quick ad break. We'll talk about Doc. We'll talk about Ben Simmons, and we'll wrap up. Here's the ad break. We're back. Dan Burke finished his coaching stint an undefeated either 2-3-0. They asked Furkan Korkmaz about Dan Burke. He said, "I don't know anybody on the team who doesn't like him. It's hard to create it as a coach because sometimes coaches are in our asses." Now that's coaching. That's hands-on. And he's a defensive coach. He's even more. It's hard to create that love and respect at the same time. Emily, did you enjoy the Dan Burke era?
Yeah, I thought the Dan Burke era was great. Parts of me like the Dan Burke era more than the Doc Rivers era, but that's okay. I mean, I hope Dan Burke gets a chance to be a head coach sometime soon. Yes. Because we're not getting rid of Doc anytime soon. So
no, certainly not. Doc is back, and Emily, you can comment on this too. One thing that he did is that he went to, I think against Orlando, a small spurt of Joel and Andre Drummond minutes. And I know that you were a big proponent of this. You were very excited by it. It worked very well. They won those minutes in a big way. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I just thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, I wouldn't do it, you know, regularly or anything. But I think, you know, it wasn't just Embiid and Drummond. Like, that was obviously the most notable part of it, but it was also like the rest of the lineup was, I think, Furkan, Yang, and Harris. So it was like everyone was at least 6'7". It was like back to those Raptors days. Well, in the Raptors series when we'd be running those massive lineups.
It was like the really tall lineup with Joel and Josh Richardson. And Al Horford, those really big lineups.
Yeah, for a while we used to run those huge lineups. And now we kind of, with Ben gone, Maxie's always starting, Seth is smaller. So we've been away from that. But yeah, it is kind of like what we had for kind of a while that didn't really work. But I loved it. I thought it was, I feel like there are definitely, you know, against certain teams that tend to play bigger, that is a playable lineup. I think that there's enough passing between Embiid and Drummond. I think there's enough perimeter defense against teams that have weaker perimeter players with Embiid and Drummond. I think that it really helps with the lack of rebounding. Having centers, having Embiid guarding centers really freed up Drummond to just be aggressive for defensive rebounds, which I really, really liked.
Right, because they were getting killed on the boards against Orlando.
Well, they have the entire year.
All the time. Yeah.
And I think that's an area where they do really miss Ben. But I thought it was fun. And I wouldn't like make it a regular part of the rotation, which I know it won't be. But I like that it was tried. I'm not shocked that it, you know, worked in the right situation. I trust Doc to you know, every 10 games, find the right situation for something like that. I wouldn't be upset if it were tried out in the playoffs, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't try it out for 10 minutes, but I would try it out for, you know, 2 minutes, you know, and get a really weird change of pace. And I think it gives you some things. I don't think it's like I said, it's not something you do often, but I thought it was a lot of fun. I really liked
it. Yeah. Emily, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I thought it was fun too. I mean, I would like to, I think there are definitely like times and places where it can be used effectively. I thought that Doc deployed it well, and I wouldn't hate seeing it again.
The week of Ben Simmons rumors, I believe first friend of the podcast, Sam Amick, reported that Sacramento basically is holding no one dear. Tyrese Halliburton and De'Aaron Fox are on the table. If we want them, we can have them. Kyle Newbeck, Philadelphia reporter, basically followed that up and said Sixers don't want De'Aaron Fox. And that they like Halliburton, but basically he's not the caliber of player that they want, which I think that they should reevaluate that. I think that he is like really good. He's young. He's not on a bad contract, and that like they could trade for him, be very good. And then if they need to make a second move this summer, he would be incredibly attractive to other teams. What do you guys think about Halliburton? We've talked about this before, so we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but like now that we seem to have heard from a reliable guy that Halliburton is on the table, do you guys have, would you guys be interested? Obviously, we just want this to end, but Emily, are you interested in Halliburton for Simmons?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he is pretty good. I like to watch him play. I think he's a fun player. Also, like half the time players I like, it's just like, who do I like to watch play? Whether they're like a fit or not does not concern me. Whether they'll be good on the Sixers doesn't concern me right now. I really just want someone I like, and that is not Ben Simmons. Those are my main criteria. So Tyrese Halliburton fits the bill.
Check, check. Dan?
Yeah, I would, I'd be really happy with Halliburton. I think that you're getting a very good passer, a very good three-point shooter for, you know, a team that kind of needs a bit of a bigger guard to be able to mix into the rotation. He's like not bad at anything. And I think there's a real chance that like Halliburton on his rookie deal with what he gives you with, you know, potentially having played well in the playoffs, maybe. I mean, I think Joel makes things easier on a lot of these guys, just played in the playoffs at all at his age. I think that, you know, he makes the Sixers better. And there's a real argument that with everything I just said, when we get to the offseason, if Ben hasn't played in a calendar year and your option is between a guy on a max who hasn't played in a caliber year or a guy on a rookie deal who's, you know, not showing any glaring weaknesses and is,
right,
you know, playing well for, you know, in the playoffs for in meaningful games. Like if you're worried about, well, what if Harden becomes available? Like maybe they probably prefer Halliburton. And with Halliburton, you're getting one of Hield or Barnes back basically, because you know, you have to make the salaries work. I would do that deal yesterday, but I understand the Sixers are kind of holding out. I think that's a deal where if you don't have anything better, you can't turn that down at the deadline.
Agreed.
We'll see what Daryl does. I don't think Daryl would, because of some of the things I just said. I hope I'm right, because I can't take this anymore. And I can't take not trying to win this season with how good Joel's looked. And we've talked about it here, and we all agree that he's, you know, he's been phenomenal, and is doesn't need to be said that we all think that he's good enough to be the best player on a championship team. And you know, I would love to see them make some kind of move to make that possible. And I think that Halliburton is a move for that makes them better short term and gives them better options long term. I really do. I would not understand passing that up past the deadline.
And it's to me, like, we're a month basically exactly from the deadline. So like, it's fine. If Daryl wants to leak to the media that like, they really like Halliburton, but he's not good enough a month away, like that's fine. I get it. You want to play the game now, that's fine. But if it's February 11th and they turn down Halliburton and Hield or Barnes for Ben, I'll be losing my goddamn mind. It's like, what are we actually doing here? Who do you actually think Simmons is around the league that you're turning down a guy like Halliburton, like in this situation? Like, that's the deal. Like, that's more than enough. Okay, Jason Dumas, sort of swing and missing here for a while. We'll see what comes of this one. But he said there's nothing imminent. Or wait, sorry. The first one, source, not sure. Daryl Morey has broadened his scope for potential targets as he looks to trade Ben Simmons. He had been adamant on only trading Ben for a select few players. I'm told there's now a list of 25 guys he'd accept straight up or in a package. Now, you may be saying a few months ago we heard about a 30-player list. I don't know exactly what the delay is here. He said there's nothing imminent, but that people should buckle in and this could go on for 4 years mindset is long gone. Joel Embiid has not put any added pressure on the front office to get a deal done. He just wants a guy who will embrace Philly and has a desire to be there. Sure, I choose to believe that, even though there hasn't been much that seems legit out of there. And then also Mark Stein reported that it was suggested to him this week by one league source to keep an eye on Atlanta as an emerging suitor for Philadelphia's Simmons. Now, is there anyone or a package of players from the Hawks? Now, it would be very funny, of course, if we trade Simmons to the Hawks. Anybody from the Hawks that you especially want? Oh, and to aggregate Brian Windhorst today, he said that basically the Timberwolves have offered every permutation of picks and players except for Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards. So any interest in the Timberwolves package without Towns and Edwards, and any interest in a Hawks package? Emily, what do you think?
Not like directly off the top of my head. Can I think of anyone that I would just like really like to have? That's not to say that there's not anyone that I would like to have just off the top of my head. I can't think of anyone.
Like John Collins on the Hawks is really good and would be excellent next to Joel. But you need to figure out what to do with Tobias because both of those guys are fours and I don't want either of them playing three. So I don't really know that you can make that. And I still think that either way you need a guard. Like a perimeter initiator guy. So I don't know that there's a real workable, you know, but Don, like you get into an area there that I don't know that there's a one for one deal there. Dan, I know you love Collins, especially in Philly. Anything else on Atlanta or Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, I think Collins would be really good with Joel. He's, you know, a true four. He's a great athlete. He's a really good shooter. And I think he would be fun. Like, I think he's a fun guy next to Joel. I have a hard time saying that I'm going to go into the off season with no one just because, or going, I'm sorry, go into the playoffs with no one just because a guy's a weird fit with Tobias, but is like definitely better than Tobias and a better fit with Joel. And like, I don't know, figure something else out with Tobias. Like, bring him off the bench, trade him. I don't really care. Play him at the three. And even if that's weird, like, I just have a hard time passing up a guy who I think really works with Joel. Figure out Tobias later when he only has 2 years left on his deal. Maybe that's easier. I don't know. I would be very excited if they got John Collins with, you know, I'm not sure exactly if that's what they're looking for. I have a feeling it's probably not because of those concerns. But for me, it's like, I would take him in a second. For the Timberwolves package, I mean, it's obviously not super exciting to just go get picks, but I would take picks. I think that's a lot of picks to offer for Ben, and I don't think Ben makes Minnesota's picks that bad. I mean, we're already going to be halfway through the year. I think the picks will still be, you know, pretty decent picks, even though Minnesota hasn't been like dreadful this year. And they've just had so much weird stuff happen. They've been bad for so long. I think that like those picks long-term have value around the league. I would take it at the deadline if you really can't get players who are going to contribute. There's just no way. Like I said, if it's me, there's no way I'm taking Ben past the deadline. Give me Pat Beverly and every single pick you have. Honestly, or like what it sounds like, it's like D'Angelo Russell would be on the table too with all those picks, which, you know, we've talked about this before. Really not a Russell guy, have never been a Russell guy, but like a guard who can kind of do stuff, put him next to Joel. Joel probably makes him better and it's better than having no one. It'll be good guard depth.
He has had a good year.
Yeah, he has. So sure. I mean, again, not taking Ben past the deadline, especially if, you know, you have all those picks on the table. So
Birds made the playoffs because of us. Their likeliest opponent right now is Tampa Bay. Just going to ask you flat out, do the Eagles go into Tampa Bay next weekend and get a win? And Emily, will you and Jordy be watching from sunny Jamaica? So two-part question. Will you guys be watching from Jamaica? And what time will that be there? And do they win?
I think it's the same time.
That's a three-part question. Oh, is it the same time?
I think so. It's not a long flight. It's like
Drew,
a 3-hour flight. These are the things.
Drew, what time is it in Jamaica right now?
I think we would probably watch it if it's available in Jamaica. I'm not sure what the television situation is like there.
Okay.
But we're pretty devoted, and at the all-inclusive, I'm sure we can enjoy beers at the bar while we watch the games. So that sounds fun. Mm-hmm.
Jamaican time is the exact same as perfect. Eastern time zone.
Love it. Thank you, Drew.
There we go. So we will be awake, hopefully. Do you think is it going to be like a day game? Is that what we're thinking?
I think probably. I think Kemsky was saying it's likely a Sunday day.
So then it's questionable. I might be on the beach.
Got it.
But I will check in on my phone. I think there's Wi-Fi. So I was at the game last night and it didn't help anything. So
no. Well, that was a mulligan. They don't come back.
It's very cold.
Win or loss?
Oh God. They're gonna lose.
Well, they're actually gonna win. Dan?
Okay. They're not very good.
I don't think they're gonna win, but I mean, I'm gonna put something out there. I think they're most likely to play the Buccaneers, and I don't think they beat the Buccaneers because Nick Foles is not walking through that door and Tom Brady's gonna beat everyone else. So this is not even meant as a shot at Hurts. It's just that Tom Brady only loses to Nick Foles. If we play the Rams, which is still possible, we would need the Rams to win today against the Niners, and we would need the Falcons to beat the Saints. I would say we beat the Rams.
Interesting. Okay. I like it. There's all that weird shit with Antonio Brown, you know, lingering over the team. Barbarians. I think it's going to linger. All right. Predicting this week's games, Emily, update the standings. Well, we all picked three wins and we all got three wins, right?
That happened. So now me and Steve are at 22-16 and Dan is at a cool 500, 19-19.
Got it. All right. This week, the Sixers play home against Charlotte and Boston, and then they play at Miami. First up will be Emily.
All right. So for the past five games, I have selected them to win and it's been working. So I'm going to continue to select them to win until it stops working. So I'm saying three wins.
Wow. I am going to say they're going to win at they're going to win the home games against Charlotte and Boston. They're going to lose at Miami. Dan.
Yeah, 3-0. Never losing again.
I love it.
I'm at me. Right.
That's it. Thank you for listening. Emily, have a wonderful honeymoon. Our love to Jordy. Safe flight to and fro. How long will you be there?
Like 4 whole days-ish.
Okay. Enjoy
a little long weekend situation.
The 76ers play Houston tomorrow as well.
What?
Yes.
You tell me this now?
There's another game. I saw it on the the rundown and I was like, does he know? And
doesn't know.
You know,
they play 4 games this week. I'm so 4-0. 4-0.
4-0.
All right, so add another win for me. So okay. Thank you so much, Drew. Wow.
Thank God this is the episode that we brought, that Drew has joined us, because that would have been a big embarrassing for you.
Wow, how embarrassing. Yes, they will beat Houston again. Wow, thank God. All right, yeah. So I say 3-1, you guys say 4-0.
Which would be a 10-game winning streak.
Jesus Christ, pretty good.
I like it.
Subscribe to the feed at Gastro Blues Pod. Emily at Third and Girl. Steve J. Lippman. DA Peltz 13. Thank you to Drew always. We'll be back with you next week. Not Emily, but we will. And that's it. We love you. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.